Hello, everybody. It's Tuesday, 12th May, and for 4 years, the Pala Pala story has really hung like an albatross around Ramaphosa's neck. But after Friday's Concord ruling and the president's address to the nation last night, the theft of cash from his Pala Pala game farm has come back to haunt him in a big way. He's basically told us that he's not going anywhere, and his plan is to drag the Section 89 panel report through a legal review that could take, as far as I understand, a year, maybe more. So I'm joined today by my colleague, Ferial Hafiji, Associate Editor at Daily Maverick. Ferial, we are sort of in a parallel reality. On one side, Ramaphosa's fighting the report in court, but on the other, the National Assembly Speaker has announced that she is going to start the process of setting up this impeachment committee that will grill Ramaphosa on the theft on his farm. Could you maybe tell us how this all started?
So before we go back, I think that's correct. You know, I think the next few months are going to see two processes unfolding. On the one hand, you'll have the impeachment committee sitting at Parliament, the political pressure on the National Assembly Speaker, Toko Didiza, to set up that committee and to set it up well is already in motion. And on the other hand, I do think you're going to have the president putting his review papers before the High Court really quickly, the judge president likely to establish a special court. And so we're going to have our work cut out for us, watching both these things happening, pretty much like we did with the Madlanga Commission ongoing on one side, while you had the ad hoc committee inquiry in Parliament on the other side. So we know how to do this. It gets very loud, though.
Absolutely. So could you tell us a little bit more about the Section 89 report and what its findings were? Ramaphosa conceded that the theft had occurred at his game farm, but he said that he didn't make it public because he didn't want to cause panic. What did the report say in contrast to this?
I'll go back a little bit, as you asked me to, back to a day in June 2022, which is almost 4 years ago, as you've said, that this has been with us. So Arthur Fraser, a very big intelligence official, an anti-apartheid activist, I think an MK member as well, he goes up the road here to Rosebank Police Station and he lays criminal concealment charges against President Ramaphosa. I started noticing this on the socials and I thought, what the hell's going on here? You know, Fraser, a big character in the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture. So I went up to the police station and said, what happened? And the police officers told me that he'd come in, I think he may have been alone, slam dunk case. They realized that this is really, really important. And then they pass it on to the Gauteng provincial heads of the police, who then take the case out of the police station, wherever it goes to. That story is then with us for 4 years now. So a Section 89 panel report, that's in terms of the impeachment clauses in the Constitution, is set up. And when it makes its finding in December 2022, they make very serious findings against President Cyril Ramaphosa. The Section 89 panel report doesn't say that the money did not belong to the president. So as he said in his address to the nation, this is my money. It's not public money. What happened is that it was stolen from my farm. But the Section 89 panel report, it says, well, there are some questions to answer here, you know. Firstly, why didn't you tell us about this when it happened? It's really big. As the president, why are you doing work on the side when you're a full-time employee of the people of South Africa? And thirdly, what was your advisor, Bejani Chauke, as well as Wally Rudo, who was the head of the Presidential Protection Unit of the police at the time, why did they go off to Namibia and not tell people this was going to happen? The president says, well, we couldn't sow panic in the nation, and so this happened quietly until Arthur Fraser laid those charges, and then all of this comes into the public domain.
And when it did come into the public domain, there was such outcry that Ramaphosa was considering resigning. Could you tell us why he backtracked on that consideration, why he didn't end up taking the plunge and resigning?
I've covered the presidency for many years, so I had quite good contacts in there, and I was saying to people, "Wow, this is serious. What's happening?" And they were like starting to pack up their bags. The president he's going to resign. I think he felt it so, such an acute judgment of him. I mean, he's not only the president, he's also one of the architects of the very constitution under which the Section 89 panel judged him, judged his behavior. But then senior ANC people went to him and said, "No, you can't. This would not be the right thing to do, not the right thing for the country, not the right thing for the party." And so we all go off and have December, but this matter continues to be adjudged, investigated by the public protector, who finds that the president doesn't have a case to answer, by SARS, the revenue service, and they say that the sale of the buffalo was never perfected, and so there was no transgression of Forex rules. That was the SA, sorry, that's the Reserve Bank, and then the SARS commissioner makes a similar finding. So three institutions say the president's in the clear on this, but it continues to haunt him, as you said in the beginning of our conversation.
And perhaps maybe not the right timing. It was also just before the ANC National Conference at the end of the year. But now, several years later, apparently the Sunday Times reported on the weekend that the president was not considering resignation this time round. What do you think has changed now?
I think what's changed is that President Ramaphosa's position in the ANC is much more certain and confident than it has been in many years of his presidency. And I must say, while lots of people, their first question is he going to resign? If you watched how things worked at the weekend, you could see that the ANC was going to bat for its president, and that he was going to choose, I think, either to just go to the committee or to take the Section 89 panel report on review, and that's the choice that he's now made. We have to remember that he had approached the Constitutional Court and he sought direct access to the courts to review the panel report, and they told him that direct access wasn't applicable at that time. So now he will have to make that review application to the High Court.
Yes, exactly. So, could you tell us what happens now that Ramaphosa said that he will take this report on legal review? You've indicated that he'll have to go to a lower court. Can both the legal review and the impeachment proceedings happen at the same time?
Well, the president's spokesperson, Vincent Mabwenya, he was on the radio this morning, and he indicated that the president would not interdict the impeachment committee once it is set up from continuing until the review was completed. So we are definitely going to have these two parallel processes on at the same time. In the courts, I think we're going to have to report it very deeply. But what happens now is his legal team and the advocates must be meeting this very moment as we speak. They decide how to make that application. It's well over 180 days. That's the period the law gives you in which to review a report like the Section 89 panel report. It's well over that. So that's the first hurdle they have to cross. How do you persuade the judges that that they need to allow this review, even though it's out of time? And then, as you've pointed out in your article, a number of other hurdles that he'll have to argue for in that review application as it's made. The president's also said he's going to ask for it to happen on an expeditious nature, so the courts have to bump it to the top of their agendas. They may be hesitant to do so, but because it's a matter of such fundamental public interest, those are the considerations, I think, of the legal teams this morning. Big moment at our courts. At Parliament, you've reported how the Speaker, Toko Dudiza, has already set out the terms by which he will seek to make good on the Constitutional Court judgment and set up that committee.
He's set out six very clear steps of what needs to happen next in the National Assembly. When President Ramaphosa launched his constitutional court case for direct access in December 2022, the case was eventually dismissed because of the court denied direct access, but the merits of the case were never considered. Do you think that he actually has a leg to stand on here? Do you think his legal case will hold up in court?
No, I think as journalists, we shouldn't attempt to adjudge the report, but we must listen to the review applications. A little mea culpa on my part. When it first came out, I spoke to lots of people and then I formed an opinion about the report. And I feel today that I shouldn't have done that. That it's our duty to say this is what the report says, this is what its critics say, and this is what its adherents say, and this is where it now hits due. And then every step of the way, follow the process and report that for your audience. Last night, as I was watching ahead of the press conference by the president, analysts on live television, I just came away feeling that they weren't putting nutritious information into the public sphere. And I think it's our duty, especially when the political lines are so clearly drawn with this matter, that we shouldn't play into that. We shouldn't be partisan, choose that side or this side. It's our duty to report what's happening and to make a very complex set of circumstances palatable and also democratically digestible by South Africans at large.
The situation has obviously changed over several years. Parliament has changed. The ANC, where it had its majority in December 2022, it had enough votes to protect Ramaphosa. It doesn't hold a majority in Parliament anymore. In this new GNU Parliament with the coalition, is it still going to be Ramaphosa's own party colleagues deciding his fate, or is the opposition finally in the sort of driver's seat?
Well, what's happened in the past few years is that the political universe has changed, shifted completely since the Section 89 panel report into Parliament, into the National Assembly Speaker then's hands. Now the ANC has subsequently lost its majority. The country is governed by a government of national unity, and the two main parties in that are the ANC and the DA. So it is a completely different political landscape that now holds sway. And obviously, I think everybody is very aware of that. The EFF and its leader, Julius Malema, very clear that they kind of have the moment. You know, I went to the judgment on Friday, May the 8th, and afterwards I followed the EFF people as they came out, and there was it was like a victory rally outside the court, because I think what Juju is seeing now is the path to power. He's a young man who's always wanted to be president or deputy president. You'll remember the reason he isn't in the GNU is that he insisted that the EFF, even though it got a relatively small percentage of votes, would only enter the GNU if he could be deputy president or Minister of Finance. So he set the bar quite high. It didn't work. The gamble didn't work. But now I think he is seeing another opportunity for the power that he's always desired.
If an impeachment inquiry is carried out and the impeachment committee decides that the president should be removed and makes recommendation to the National Assembly, do you think that it is likely that two-thirds of the House will vote to follow through with that recommendation?
I just want to take a little step back. I read a really good piece by Adrian Basson, the News 24 editor-in-chief, this morning, and he looks very carefully at the ad hoc parliamentary inquiry into the revelations or the claims made by the police general in Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi in July last year. He says that committee became, in his words, a Boswell Wilkie circus. Then he sets out, I thought, quite a coherent argument of how the speaker should go about establishing this committee so that it doesn't devolve into the kind of political drama which the other one came. It's very clear attention must be paid to who chairs it. Then the committee must have access to excellent legal research, and that a panel of lawyers must be available to them so that they're making informed commentary and asking informed questions, and that they stay within the law. So I think the first question is going to be, and for us to watch extremely carefully, is who chairs the committee? How is it set up? who is the evidence leader going to be? Because all of those, they lay grounds for whether the process ensures that, one, it's credible, but that it enjoys the trust of the nation. So if you watch, for example, the Madlanga Commission, I'm not sure what your view is, but as I watch it, I feel like the commissioners chosen there are people whom we can trust to get to the bottom of things. And that's what you want in these processes. Not high drama, not playing to the gallery or the cameras, but asking the questions that burns in all of our hearts. So I think we're a step away yet from making a determination of what will happen should that committee in fact confirm the findings of the Section 89 panel, which, as yourself and Rebecca Davis have written in the Daily Maverick, the panel itself said we didn't have access to all the information we needed. So we trust now that that information or evidence is going to be placed before the committee, because also the president, he hasn't told us, I think, the full story of how all these dollars come to be stuffed into the back of a, I think, leather sofa on his farm. That evidence, when the president sits before the committee, is really going to be a moment for accountability and also for very frank questions from the committee members.
If we could look beyond Parliament and just talk about very briefly how this could affect the ANC's political chances leading up to the local government elections, which have been announced for the 4th of November this year.
So, mostly in my day job, I'm a Johannesburg reporter. And so I spend time like counting potholes and streetlight outages and how many people don't have electricity and water. And I think the ANC's broken councils across the country are for the first time going to count against it, because until now the ANC has very much relied on its liberation history to still win elections. In 2024, we see that pattern shifting, and work by MISTRA and others have shown that if a party comes down in the national election, that trajectory continues downward in the local government election. So all sets of polls are showing that the ANC comes even below the 40% it achieves in Joburg, where I live. Natasha Marion of Business Day reported that it's at about 20%. I've heard 29%. So that's the context I paint for you of where the ANC finds itself. To have its president facing an impeachment committee when he should be on the hustings trying to revive its political fortunes does place the party in a very, very difficult position. I've never seen it as unprepared or unsteady ahead of an election as this one.
Talking about unsteadiness, the GNU has, I guess, faced its fair share of battles since coming to power. How do you think the GNU will weather the storm?
I suppose the key question is, what's the DA going to do? DA's got new young leader in Jordan Hill Lewis. This is his first big challenge. And what has he said so far? So yesterday on Clement Maniatella's show, he said that already business leaders and others had been calling him to say, you've got to keep this GNU on track. And that means go easy on the president in the committee. And he said very clearly in several statements between Friday and now that don't expect that from us. Our lodestar is the constitution. And then obviously he made a political party statement. He said for too long the ANC has often been its own worst enemy, and too much of what happens is hidden from public view. So the committee is an opportunity to bring truth to light. So I think it's also the GNU is going to possibly be a very different animal come 2024 or sooner. You'll also remember there's another big date looming, Tory, and that's the ANC conference in 2027. President Ramaphosa is in the twilight of his political career. And I do think if the deputy president, Paul Mashatile, does become president, the EFF is a much more comfortable partner for him than the DA. So I think our political landscape is shifting quite sharply, and what the November 4th election will do is give us a sense of which direction it's shifting in.
Infer, you have sat in the Parliament galleries through Zuma through the Zondo years. Does this feel different? Does it feel like the institutions and the processes are moving a lot faster than the president?
But my learning from it is, firstly, to make clear that President Ramaphosa is no President Zuma. Palapala hangs like it's a real albatross around his neck. But I don't think that he's a captured president in the way that our former president very clearly was and is shown to have in the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture, what we call the Zondo Commission. I think it's a big moment. I'm not sure if it's of the same depth and breadth as those two processes. But the bigger lesson I take from all of this, and if you watch X and I speak to my friends in Kenya and Uganda and Nigeria, our constitution works, you know, our systems of accountability work. There was a Zambian politician who I was watching, and he was saying in other countries, what would have happened is that people would be locked up. There would be a media ban, and the president would just cling in there. Something very different happened here. And I'm always proud of our country for staying true to the constitution. And I'm proud of our civil society for making sure that we do that.
Thank you. This has been fantastic. It's been great to chat to you.
You too. Thanks, T.